G'day, and welcome to the Fasting Highway podcast. I'm your host, Graham Curry, from Perth, Australia. I lost 60 kilos or 132 pounds living an intermittent fasting lifestyle and have successfully maintained that weight loss now for over a year. I wanted to bring this series of podcasts to you to give you an insight into what that journey has been like. I also wanted to give you some information about intermittent fasting, talk to people that are doing it, and bring in some experts in the field, including some leading authors of some great books about the subject. Talk about the highs, the lows, the triumphs, the celebrations, the negatives, the positives, and everything in between. Nothing is a silver bullet, as they say, but intermittent fasting is about the closest thing that you can get to a perfect health plan with a side effect of weight loss. So sit back in the next few weeks and enjoy life on the fasting highway with us. Thank you. G'day, and welcome to the Fasting Highway podcast. And just before we start today's episode, just a reminder that the Fasting Highway Facebook group is now open. You can come and discuss intermittent fasting there with some of the leading fasters from around the world that are in the group, ask questions, and find out some things to help you through your fasting protocols. Let's get to today's guest. This is episode 20. So today, I'm very fortunate to be joined by Daniel Deal, and Daniel is from Oklahoma City, Oklahoma, in the United States. And Daniel has been on quite an inspiring journey and has lost some 160 pounds over the last 2 years, and just recently completed his first 5K run in a very respectable time, and what is a remarkable achievement. So here to tell us all about that journey so far is Daniel. G'day, Daniel, and welcome to the Fasting Highway, and thank you for joining me today.
Absolutely, Graham. Thanks for having me on. I appreciate it. You're a big inspiration to a lot of people that I know, so it's a pleasure.
Oh, thanks, mate. So, Daniel, what we might do is just get a bit of your backstory about your sort of life and sort of what sort of trials and tribulations you had with your weight and how you found your way to intermittent fasting.
Well, I'm not sure where to start, actually. I would say as a kid, I was probably always a little bit, extremely overweight, but I was definitely always a little on the husky side, you know, if you know what I mean. Never really to the point where I felt completely comfortable, but wasn't ever too self-conscious about it. That was kind of the way my whole life went. I was always, never was a thin person, always on the bigger side, but never what I consider to be just majorly overweight. That didn't really happen until later in life after getting married and having a lovely wife that can cook up some good meals and getting a little comfortable, I guess. And weight just kind of slowly goes on. So I didn't really discover that. I never really did too many diets growing up or even through adulthood. I'm 40, almost 48 years old now. So even through most of my life, I never really tried a whole lot of diets. Not one to kind of stick with anything too long like that. So I guess IF, my family and I went on vacation. And we were in Branson, Missouri, and running around, you know, doing all the different things, and then decided we wanted to try and ride a roller coaster, or I wanted to ride a roller coaster. And so my wife and I went to go sit down in the seat and discovered I was a little too big to fit. So I had to take the walk of shame back. And, you know, that was probably the first thing that really stands out to me where my weight actually kept me from doing anything. I've always been able to do my job just fine. I've always been able to do any family functions. I've never had a problem like on airplanes, getting on a plane, probably close sometimes where I would not quite be able to get the seatbelt buckled, you know, in the plane, but always managed to suck it in just enough to get it done and not embarrass myself too bad. But the roller coaster, that one, there's just no way around it. So I had to get off and So when we got back from vacation, I came home and sat down on the computer and started Googling things. And I think, if I remember right, I think one of the first things I Googled was why regular diets don't work and it's hard to keep the weight off, something to that effect. And I came across some of Dr. Jason Fung's videos. I'm sure you've probably seen lots of those videos. And something about that just stuck with me and clicked in my brain. And I started learning everything I could about fasting, doing the intermittent fasting. And it just really, really appealed to me.
Oh, that's great, mate. So I think a lot of us have those catalyst moments, Daniel, where something happens and it just really pushes us over the edge. And in your case, that was that roller coaster. And I had a similar experience on a plane. I was sitting next to my wife and I was taking up half her seat. And I thought enough's enough. And I really resonate with what you just said then. So when you found your way to intermittent fasting, mate, how did you start? What was your fasting protocol and why did you choose that?
Okay, so I was a little bit skeptical about it just because, you know, after reading the science and reading up what I could about it, I wasn't really feeling like it was the same as other diets. I wasn't really feeling like, okay, this is still in my mind at the time was a diet, but it was somehow was way different than anything else I'd ever seen or heard about. And so I kind of was a little skeptical. And so I just decided I would start out with what looked to be like the minimum, which was a 16-8 protocol. And I was like, okay, I'll just not snack and not do the late night eating. And I will skip my breakfast the next morning. And that was all I was going to do. You know, at the time I didn't know about clean fasting. So I was still having like Diet Cokes and, you know, diet zero calorie drinks and stuff like that. But I did the 16-8 that first day and I decided that wasn't really too bad. And I just kept doing it and it was pretty easy. And the weight started falling off. I didn't restrict anything. I honestly put it to the test because I didn't change the way I ate. I didn't change a single thing. All I did was not do the late night snacking and I skipped a breakfast and that was it.
Okay. So,
go ahead.
Yeah, that's great, mate. So with the 16-8, just tell us a bit about your weight too. Like when you first started IF, what was your weight sort of looking like? And if you could just run us through how that weight loss sort of went over the first few months.
Okay. So when I first started, I'm about 6 foot tall. So when I first started, I had my wife go to the store and she got me a scale and I told her, look, it's going to have to be, you know, because I didn't have any scales or anything that would weigh me. All the ones people would have at their homes, we didn't have one here at the house, but all the ones everybody would have in their homes only went up to like 250 pounds or 280 pounds, I think, something like that. So there just wasn't any, and when I'd step on it, it would, you know, nearly break the needle off. So I asked her if she would go and get me one at the store that would go up to at least 400 because I didn't figure I was above 400 pounds. So that should get me. And I got on it that day when she got back with it and I was 367 pounds. So,
wow,
that's quite a shock when you see a number like that pop up on a scale. So, so I started, and I had started that day. I weighed myself, and then I started the IF that night. You know, she got home from the store, and I quit snacking that night and skipped breakfast that next morning, and that's where I was on. And I think initially, I probably the first week, 2 weeks, even 3 weeks, I was dropping 4 and 5 pounds a week doing that. Eventually, after probably the first couple months, it kind of tapered off and was doing more like maybe about 2 pounds a week. And that doing the 16-8, and that it stayed that way for a long time. I never changed my protocol or anything. That protocol is a little different now. I do things a lot differently now, but it's It's more natural. It happened naturally. It's not something that I did because the weight loss stopped. I did it just because what happened was, well, normally lunchtime would come around and it would be time to eat lunch. My 16 hours would be up and I was not hungry. And so I was like, well, I'm not going to just eat, you know, I'm not hungry for lunch. I'm just going to wait just a little bit longer until I'm hungry and then I'll eat. And that turned into being probably closer to 18 hours. And so I just continued to do that and just wouldn't eat until I was hungry. And I would say that went on where I would do somewhere between 18 and 20 hours of fasting a day. I probably did that for another 6 months. And then that just turned into, you know, when you're getting up to 20 hours, it starts getting to where you're like, well, there's really no point in eating. Dinner time is just around the corner. You know, what am I going to do now? There's just really no point. I'll just go ahead and just wait. And so that turned into just a one meal a day approach. And I've been doing that for a long time, just until about the last 3 or 4 weeks. So,
okay. So you started roughly back in September 2018, was it, Daniel?
That's right. Yes.
Yeah. Okay. So you're 367 then. So roll the clock forward 2 years. What sort of weight are you now, mate?
I'm at 206 now. So
wow. So you've lost like 160 pounds.
Yes. Yeah. When you look at that and you think about those weights, because I would, when I weighed the 367 pounds, I remember thinking to myself when I would hear other people say, oh, I need to lose 20 or 30 pounds. And, you know, it's kind of defeating because then you look at yourself and kind of take a little bit and you're like, man, if I were to actually go and try and lose weight, I need to lose probably 100, 150 pounds. And that just seems undoable. And you kind of throw it to the side and just decide you're just going to be the fat guy. So,
yeah, it's like talking to myself here, mate. What you're saying is really a mirror image almost. I was a similar sort of weight to you when I started, similar sort of catalyst moment. And I think we all have that tipping point, don't we, Daniel? Did you feel that you were just going to be obese for the rest of your life? Like I got to that point, mate, where I was so heavy, where I just thought, there's no way I'm going to be able to lose the 200 odd pounds, or not 200, but 130 I lost. But did you get to that point where you just felt that it was too big a mountain to climb?
Yeah, exactly. And you know, to build on that is I didn't really have anything else other than just the weight and knowing I was overweight pushing me, because I didn't really have any major health problems. You know, nothing, my blood pressure wasn't really high. It was maybe on the verge, on the high end, but nothing that doctors would ever want to do anything about or give me any medication for. I wasn't, they didn't ever put me on medication or say I was pre-diabetic or, you know, anything like that. So I'm generally healthy. I've never had any heart problems or, you know, anything like that. It's just the weight has never kept me from doing anything. It was just that at the time I thought it was keeping me from doing. Now I know better. It definitely was keeping me from doing stuff. But, you know, in that moment, yeah, you didn't really feel like it was. I felt fine other than, you know, getting dressed and sweating like a pig, just getting out of the shower and trying to put clothes on and, you know, bending over to tie your shoes and you're nearly out of breath and you can't breathe because you're bending over and, you know, things like that. But I don't know.
You don't really realize at the time, do you? And I know my doctors used to get so frustrated because I'd go in there for a checkup, you know, guy that was 357 pounds. And they would look at me and say, these blood results you have and your blood pressure and everything else just don't stack up. You're such an obese guy, and yet you have such great blood work and everything like that. And I was similar to you. I never really had any of those issues that people have. I was never pre-diabetic, or I never had any heart issues or blood pressure issues, and I wasn't on any medications. And life, I suppose, health-wise, apart from the weight, I was pretty good with that. But I really resonate with what you just said. It's the small things about tying up your shoes or going for a walk, or that's where it really finds you out, I think. And I know when I was my girls were at school, mate, and as a parent, you get found out sometimes when I have the running races at school with the parents and all that sort of stuff, or the swimming races, and they were things I used to avoid. And I know you have a daughter. How did you feel going through your daughter's school life as an obese dad, mate?
Well, it's a little, I don't think she ever looked at it differently. I never saw anything from her where she was like, she wasn't ever embarrassed of me or anything like that. But I think as a dad, you probably feel that somewhat, where you're just hoping, you know, people are, you go in a room and you look around, you know, when we go to church or when I go to her school functions or whatever, and you can't help but look around the room and notice that you're the biggest guy there, you know? So that does kind of stand out to you, but I don't think it ever really affected me in that way. Now that I look back on things, because she played a lot of volleyball, and so we would go to events where we'd have to take chairs or something like that. My nephew plays baseball, and so we'd take chairs, and you know, the regular fold out, you know, chairs that you use at the ballpark, just the regular ones that you buy at the store, would not hold me, because I would have to push to get myself up out of a chair, and I'd nearly snap them and break them in half. And so we ended up having to find me a larger chair, you know, and that's, you know, you kind of play it off in a funny way, like, oh, look at my big comfy chair. But I know now everybody looks at that and is like, uh-huh, yeah, we know why you have that. But, you know, so things like that you can look back on now and see, but in the moment, you don't really, I don't know, you just kind of brush it off, I guess.
Yeah. A funny story actually about chairs, and I was the same, and I broke a lot of chairs at my time. And I was going into a music concert one day, and the lady said to me, oh, you can't bring any tents in here. And I said, oh, no, that's not a tent I'm carrying. It's actually my chair. And because it was one of those, you know, those oversized camp
chairs. Right, yeah, that's what I was talking about. It's the kind of chair I'm talking about. And I had a big oversized one. Yeah, it's huge.
Yeah, I remember chairs was a real sort of thing that I used to go to restaurants and I'd break chairs. And I know I used to scope restaurants out just to see what sort of chairs they had. And if the chairs looked all right and I thought if they could hold me, then I'd say, yeah, let's go to that restaurant. But if I walked in past the restaurant with my wife and I thought the chairs looked a bit flimsy, I'd say, oh, no, let's go somewhere else. The chairs.
You know, you go into a lot of restaurants and they'll offer you a table or a booth, and I almost always would have to just choose a table, even though the booths are sometimes a little more comfortable. But, you know, my belly would be pushed up against the table, or sometimes you would be like, no, this one doesn't have a big enough space for me to squeeze into it. And, you know, so those definitely plays a part. I've broken, I've broken many of attic ladders. You know, I had to buy a reinforced ladder to get up into our attic in our other house. And, you know, because the regular ones, I would snap the steps off on them.
I always used to have to pay people to come around and do things like cleaning the gutters, or if there was something on the roof that needed to be doing, because, you know, at my weight, I just simply couldn't get on the roof. It was just too risky.
Yeah, it's dangerous.
And now I sort of spring up there, and that's one of the great NSVs, of being able to do my own gutters and my own sort of maintenance on the roof and that sort of thing. And, you know, but 160 pounds, mate, is such a life-saving and life-changing journey that you've been on these last 2 years. I wanted to talk about the clean fasting for a minute. When did you get to that point, Daniel, that you started clean fasting? How did you find out about that? Okay. And what sort of difference did you find that it made?
Okay, so for me, I didn't find out about it until, because I didn't know anything about the Delay, Don't Deny. I hadn't come across that book. I didn't know anything about Jen Stevens, but I was on some other, I don't even remember the names of them now, but I was on some other Facebook pages for intermittent fasting. And I would get frustrated with them just because of the things they would talk about, and always telling you what you needed to be eating. Seemed like they were all pushing some kind of keto thing or whatever. So I would get frustrated with that. But there was somebody on several of those sites, and they just kept on any of my comments. They would post to check out Delay, Don't Deny by Jen Stevens. And I was like, oh, okay, well, that's several people now that have mentioned that. And so I did. And so I checked it out, and that's where I learned about, doing clean fasting. And so I was like, well, I'm not far from that now. All I need to do is drop the zero calorie drinks. You know, that's it. Everything else I think I was good on. So I stopped drinking the Diet Cokes and only had unsweetened tea, water mostly, and coffee in the mornings. I've always had my coffee black, so that part wasn't ever a problem. So that part was easy. And what was amazing, you know, I told you when I did the 16 and 8 in the beginning, and then it slowly moved to like 18 and then OMAD. Well, when I look back now, it went from the 16 and 8, and I started doing longer times because I wasn't hungry. Well, that corresponds with when I started doing the clean fasting. And when I started doing the clean fasting, the fasting just got easier, and I was able to just go longer and longer. So I'm sure I was getting into my fat stores a lot easier. I got fat adapted, where I'm sure I probably wasn't before, even though I was losing weight. I'm sure I was losing the weight because I was eating less. I wasn't eating breakfast on top of everything, and the fasting helped in that way. But the clean fasting definitely, it just changed the ease of how the fasting went for me. That's what happened.
That's fantastic, mate. And we're big advocates on clean fasting, as you know. So what about food style, mate? I know people are going to, you just mentioned there that you didn't change your diet and that sort of thing. So as you went on with intermittent fasting, Daniel, did you find that your food choices started changing? Did you gravitate towards, you know, the high quality food?
Okay, so some of this might make people irritated at me because I have not really changed the kind of foods that I eat where I tried to change it. You know, I know you dropped sugar, you know, to do that. I haven't really eliminated anything from my diet. I still eat all the things. But I did notice that the foods that I never used to like, I would start to like. So I would start asking my wife to put more vegetables in our dinners. And could we have, I started liking Brussels sprouts and asparagus and different peppers and things I never liked before. I never would eat that stuff before. I would pick it out. If she put it in the dinner, I would pick it out and it'd be on the side of the plate when we were done. But now I'm begging for more of it. So my taste buds definitely changed, and I do like and crave better quality foods. But even with that, I haven't quit eating the other stuff, you know, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it does. So, mate, we're going to talk about the non-scale victories and also the health benefits that you found along the way. I mean, you've lost so much weight. And I know you said, apart from the weight, your health was pretty good. But what sort of non-scale victories have you found? And I mean, you mentioned things there like chairs. What sort of other
stuff? Well, I've had skin tags that have just completely disappeared. It was funny one time because I was on one of Jen's groups, and I was on one of the Delay Don't Deny groups, and I was seeing people posting that their skin tags disappeared. And I was like, well, that's kind of crazy. And I went and felt to some that I knew I had, and they were gone. I was like, oh, okay, well, that's interesting. So those were gone. I've got two bad toenails, you know, they're not completely better yet, but they've started to improve. My shoulders used to always just ache, and my hands would ache to the point I couldn't even write for a very long period of time because my hands and everything would just ache. I'm sure that's just all the inflammation and my shoulders, and that pain is gone. I used to take a leave on a daily basis, and I probably haven't taken a leave in 2 years now. So I don't get headaches. Honestly, that's just everything has just gotten better.
Yeah. Complete rejuvenation, isn't it? Bizarre, mate. When you talked about the toenails there. And again, it's like talking to myself. I had a similar thing, toenails.
that I thought would never go away. Everything I tried, I'd had laser treatment, I'd spent a fortune on all sorts of things trying to get rid of it, and I just couldn't budget. And I think you've probably heard me talk about the psoriasis before, and that was a mind, And like I had psoriasis, mate, 20 years, and three specialists said you will never get rid of that. And 6 months of intermittent fasting, and it completely left my body. The toenail, that improved. There were so many things that we found. But with your fasting too, Daniel, you sort of mentioned there that you went from 16 and 8, and then you moved it up to the sort of 20-hour sort of mark. Did you do any sort of extended fasting or alternate day fasting?
I didn't do anything like that at the time. I just kind of went with the flow, and everything was working, and I was losing weight, and everything was great. And so I just kept going, and I just wait and wouldn't eat until I always made sure I would go 18 or 20 hours. And then if I was hungry, I would eat something. If I wasn't, then I just wouldn't. And I would just wait until dinner. And that just became an everyday thing. That was the way of life for me. That's what I did. I never did any of the alternate day fasting until just within the last month I have done that. And that's just because I'm really not for the weight loss, because I'm at the point now I do still want to lose some more weight. I've still got maybe another 20 or 25 pounds I'd like to lose, but I'm not in a big hurry to do it. So I've started doing the alternate day fasting now just for the autophagy, and because I've noticed a little bit of loose skin, which if you're going to lose 160 pounds, you're going to have a lot of loose skin. And I honestly don't have a lot. I have very little, which is pretty amazing to me, to see that I don't have much, but I'm just trying to minimize that the most I can. And I really found I really like the alternate day fasting. I don't have a problem going 40, 42 hours without eating anything, which if you'd have told me that 2 years ago, I'd have just thought you were the biggest liar on earth. So amazing that I can even do that.
Yeah. What sort of differences do you find in energy and that sort of thing when you do these longer fasts? What changes there compared to, say, the 20-hour fast? Does anything change there? Or what
I do find that the energy is there, because if you do start feeling a little bit hungry, maybe around the times you would normally eat, I really feel like it's mostly mental, because it comes at the times you would normally be eating your dinner. And usually a cup of black coffee kind of holds that at bay and makes it go away. So normally I'll just try and keep myself busy. But what I find is, you start getting into 24 and 30 hours and, 40 hours even, where I'll just decide, I think I'm just going to go to the track and like run a little bit, so the energy I don't even know how to explain it, honestly. You would think after going that long with nothing to eat and only having some black coffee and some water, you would just be sitting down vegging out on the TV, but that's not the case.
And you mentioned there you like to run a bit. Run us through your exercise, mate. What did the exercise look like for you before you started, when you were that 367 compared to now? What are you doing now compared
to then? So then I wouldn't say I did any exercise other than my job. I'm on my feet most of the day. I'm in and out of a truck. I'm a vendor in retail businesses, a vendor representative. So I drive my truck to one store. I get out, I'm going in and I'm doing some different stuff. And there's some lifting involved, a lot of walking. And then I'm back in my truck for a little while longer, going to another store and then repeat, you do the same thing. And so I was on my feet all day, doing different things, lifting lots of weight while I'm at work. Nothing that I considered to be exercise, but there was definitely some motion and movement. I wasn't just a couch potato, but now I would decide I've got all this energy. And so I would say after I lost probably about 80 pounds, I would start going to the track. We have a track here near to our house. And so I would start going there and just walking the track And two laps around that was 3 miles. And so I was like, okay, well, I'm going to go walk a couple laps around the track. And I would notice in there, I would just feel so good that I would decide, okay, I'm going to try and just jog a little bit of this. And I would start to jog, and then I'd realize, okay, I'm still too big to do that. So, because my knees would start hurting, and I was like, I'm just going to hurt myself by doing this. So I would stop and continue walking. And then as the weight came off, the energy is still there. And so now I go 3 to 4 times a week. I generally go and I run about 3 miles 3 to 4 times a week now. And I still have the same job. I'm still in the same line of work. So that part hasn't changed. But even after I'm done working, where normally I would just come home and need to just sit down and do nothing, I'll even go run before I come home. And then even after I get home, then I still come home and have the energy to do the yard and, different stuff like that. So.
Amazing. It must have helped you so much with your job as well. I mean, I can imagine getting in and out of a truck and taking in boxes and that sort of thing, and being 200, 160 pounds lighter. It must
Yeah,
be
I would,
amazing.
especially in the summertime. I'm in Oklahoma, our summer times get a little humid and definitely they get hot. And so I would definitely sweat through some shirts, during the day. And now that doesn't happen now. It's amazing my body's not having to work near as hard, I guess, and I'm not sweating as much as I used to.
A couple of things you said there about the loose skin. I was very fortunate too, mate, but I put it down to the fact that I'm so tall. I mean, I'm 6'5". And when I lost that weight, I sort of was worried about that I was going to have a lot of that loose skin. And apart from a bit on my arms, which I'm working on, I don't really have it. And I noticed the longer that I've been fasting, I'm coming up nearly 3 years now. My body seems to be changing. I start that body recomposition that you get. And I mean, I don't know, you probably know JJ, John
Yeah, you
Deering
just had
from the
him on.
groups. He is amazing, mate. Yeah. And when you see him, he's 61 and he's been fasting for some 6 years now. And he said that his body has just got tighter and tighter over time. And I think that's a really natural thing that happens with fasting. And I think people that have loose skin, I think you sort of shouldn't worry about it too much. I mean, what's worse, loose skin or a life of
Oh, absolutely.
obesity and
And
misery?
that's why I did this. Before I even, when I was first starting, to lose and I'd start to lose weight, I remember my wife telling me, now you're going to have lots of loose skin. How are you going to be all right with that? And it's like, yeah, whatever. I'm fine. I can put clothes on. I'm not running around with no clothes on. So it can be covered up. So I had to get the weight off. So I was good with it, but I'm just really, today,
Yeah.
I'm really shocked at the very little that I do have.
You mentioned your wife there, mate, and I know for my wife, it was a total transformation of me. And I used to lie there at night and I used to think to myself, my wife is lying next to a guy that's now 130 pounds lighter than what I was. It must be so
Yeah,
bizarre for our wives.
I'm not even sure she's really expressed that feeling. I'll have to actually maybe ask her about it. I'm not sure. But I can't imagine that it's not a weird feeling. She'll come home now and she pretty much buys my clothes. I'm not a big shopper, so she'll come home from shopping or something and bring a new shirt home for me and she'll hold it up and she's like, "This is the size you said you were, right?" And I was like, "Yeah, that doesn't look like it's going to fit me though. That's a pretty small shirt." And then I go and put it on and sure enough, it fits. It's amazing. Yeah, it's cr
That's
really crazy
amazing.
to me. It's a miracle. I tell everybody I know about it to the point I think probably got on my wife's nerves a little bit where everybody, as soon as they would ask me, I'm sure she just rolled her eyes and was like, "Oh no, here he goes. Somebody's about to go to school for about the next 30 or 45 minutes," because I just couldn't quit talking about it.
Yeah, I know I was the same, mate. I used to drive my wife insane. And I know one of the downsides of intermittent fasting for us was we were very social people. I was a bit of a party animal in my day. And we used to love parties and having people around. And I know when I was trying to lose the weight that I decided that I was going to withdraw from that. And how did you find the social aspect? And when you went to sort of things like weddings, parties, birthdays, how did you handle that?
Nothing really. Honestly, it didn't really change for me other than I felt more comfortable, you know, in my skin and in my clothes. I just felt like, you know, when you're that big and you go to put on your pants and, you know, you have a big belly hanging over your belt and, you know, your shirts don't fit and you're having, you know, if you're getting dressed up with something like that, you have to tuck your shirt in. And I've always been somebody that could never really tuck a shirt in because it just didn't look good. So those kind of things, I was just uncomfortable. So I dread those kinds of atmospheres because I, you know, I just was so uncomfortable in the clothes. So, and that's definitely different now. I don't mind. I just get dressed and go and tuck my shirt in and it's no big deal. I can actually look down and see my belt, which is amazing. I was in a size 48 jeans and I am down to a 34 jeans now. So that's quite a bit. I was in a 4X shirt. I even had one 5X shirt, one of them, because it ran small, right? 5X, that's a, but most of mine were 4Xs, yeah. And now I'm using an extra large is what I'm in now, and they fit comfortably, so.
Clothing for me was a big driver, and I turned into a total clothes horse, mate. I love it. I mean, I used to hate shopping like you. I would avoid shopping like the plague because I knew there was never any decent clothes to fit me, and it used to frustrate me. And when I got the weight off, I just loved it. And I went to every clothes shop I could go to. I went to all the label shops. I bought the best clothes I could buy. And people used to say to me, oh, you must save a lot of money intermittent fasting. And my wife just laughs and says, no, you want to see the money that he spends on clothes and shoes. But I just think it's so freeing, mate. And it's so great.
Yeah, I don't, I'm still not a shopper, but I know my wife says all the time, you know, cause she's the one that would come home with a shirt and I have no sense of style myself. So I don't think she would trust me to go pick out my own clothes. And it's probably a smart decision, you know, to do that. So I kind of let her do that kind of thing. But she does tell me all the time, I can find so many more options now. I can find you all kinds of stuff now, where before she would just have to look at the clothes and see what she could find in a size that would fit me and then just get it, whether it was attractive or not.
Yeah. I know you mentioned there the 34-inch jean, and I'm sitting here talking to you in a 34-inch jean now, and I went into the Levi's shop, and the girl said to me, I said, oh, I want a 36-inch, you know, jean. And she goes, oh, no. She said, that's too big for you. I said, what do you mean it's too big for me? She said, oh, well, you try these 34s, athletic taper, they were called. And I thought, you're kidding. And anyway, I went and tried them on, and they fitted me beautifully. And I came out, and I was just shaking my head. And I remember the first time that I put on a shirt without an X in front of it, a large shirt, and it fitted me, mate, and it was so emotional that I broke down over it. I just couldn't believe it that I'd got to that stage where I got all the X's off my clothes. And now in maintenance, it's a real driver for me. I have a beautiful wardrobe of clothes. And one of the things, mate, on the way down, when your clothes obviously started hanging off you, what were you doing there? Were you getting rid of them straight away, or did you have that mindset?
Well, I wore a lot of work shirts that I would get for my job. They would provide me with shirts. So those aren't always the easiest to get. So generally, I probably wore them way longer than I really should have, and they were just drooping off of me and definitely too big. And then I would eventually able to order some smaller sizes, and I would, you know, get 4 or 5 new work shirts in, and I would, by the time I would get them in, they would be a little bit too big, and I would just wear them until they were just so baggy and just impossible to wear that I would order some more. So I probably wore them a lot longer than I should, And then I would eventually just get rid of them. And most of them are work shirts, so those I just throw away. Those aren't going to be any good to anybody else. Other clothes I've donated to, you know, you don't have that many friends that are your size, you know, when you're that big. So there's not a whole lot of people you can give them to, but usually you'll donate them. Somebody will need them. So we'll take them to a donation place, a Goodwill or something like that. So
I think that's the way to go, mate. And mate, I want to talk to you about your friends and family you just mentioned there. What sort of support did they sort of give you along the way? And did you get any kickback from anybody or any work colleagues, or did you tell many people?
I did tell some people about it. I probably told everybody about it once it started working. And once I had read, you know, so much about it, I would tell everybody. I never remember getting any kind of kickback from anybody. I think my whole family was always supportive. I'm sure in the back of their mind, they were probably thinking, yeah, okay, this, you know, I'll support him doing this, but it's just going to be the same old thing. I do remember telling my dad about it because my dad was a little overweight. He's 73 years old and he's about 5'9" and he was up to about 245 pounds. And I was telling him about it after I'd lost, after I started losing some weight, 60 pounds or 80 pounds or something like that. And he was like, yeah, that's really good. I don't know. I don't think he really paid a whole lot of attention to me about it. You know, it's kind of one of those things that goes in one ear and out the other. But then once you start losing a drastic amount of weight, they just can't help but take notice. And so then my dad was like, okay, I'm ready to listen now. Tell me what this is you're doing. And so I was like, okay. So I started telling him about it and told him how I started doing the 16 and 8. And I said, look, I just drink black coffee. He's like, well, that's all I drink is black coffee and water. I was like, okay. And what time do you finish eating dinner? And he's like, I'm usually done eating dinner about 5 o'clock. And then I might have a snack or something, you know, later before bed. And I was like, okay, so just cut out the late night snacks, continue with your black coffee and your water, however much of it you want, and skip breakfast. He's like, that's it? I was like, yeah, just to start, do that. He's like, okay, I can do that. Anybody can do that. I was like, yeah, I know. It's nothing too daunting. So he started doing that, and now he's been doing it for probably about a year now, maybe a little over a year, maybe 14 months, something like that. I think he's been doing it. And he generally fasts about 18 or 19 hours a day. And he's down to 179 pounds now, you know, because he push mows his yard. You know, he doesn't have a riding lawnmower or any of that. And he's got a pretty large yard. He lives out in the country setting. So not like on a lot of land, but he has a big yard. And he push mows it, and it would take him, you know, he'd go out and do a little bit of it each day, and it'd probably take him 2 or 3 days to do it. And his legs would hurt, you know, and they would be fatigued, and, you know, he just couldn't get through the whole thing. And now he goes out, mows the whole thing in one shot, and still has energy to do other stuff. It's amazing. 73 years old, he's in fantastic.
Unbelievable, mate. I'd love to get your dad on the podcast to talk about that, because I have so many people say to me in their late 50s, 60s, and they say, oh, you know, it's too late now. We don't want to go through all that and try to do it. And I say, look, it's never too late to change. It's never too late to try intermittent fasting. And I know people, I actually know a lady that's 75, and she saw my results similar to yourself. And she started, she reversed her diabetes. She's back playing lawn bowl. She's a champion bowler now. And she tells all the people in the 70s to get on it. And I think your dad is absolutely a marvel, mate. But Daniel, how do you find people react to you now as a sort of normal sized man compared to when you're obese? Do you know?
You know, I hear people say that all the time, that they do get treated differently because of their size. And I personally haven't noticed anything like that. I really feel like most people treated me great as a big guy, and they seem to treat me the same now. So I haven't really noticed with that. I haven't noticed any difference. I know some people do, and I haven't seen that I haven't seen that in my own life. I don't doubt that it happens at all. But for me, I mean, I guess there are a few people at work, you know, when you look back at it, and I would go into some of these stores and I would walk in, you know, and I would see guys that have worked there for years and years, and they've, you know, so I would come in at 300 and something pounds, and, you know, instead of just the first thing they say is, "Hey, how's it going?" They were like, "Hey, the buffet's across the street," you know, things like that. So, you know, there are those jokes, and those you just kind of laugh them off. And so obviously those kind of things you're not going to get, you know, I don't do that anymore. So maybe in some ways it probably happens a little more than I probably acknowledged at the time, I guess.
And so is intermittent fasting something, Daniel, that you sort of committed to, or is it something you want to do for the rest of your life?
Absolutely no doubt about that. The part I don't know about is that where I'll end up falling as far as what protocol I'll end up sticking to. I guess I'll figure that out at the time. But my guess would be that I'll probably still do probably an OMAD or something, just a 20, 22-hour fast. Maybe I'll end up having some kind of a little snack and then dinner, something like that. I don't really know. I generally don't have snacks because the snacks for me seem to just – I'm one of those people that likes to eat until I'm full. I have a hard time just eating a little bit of anything. I can't just graze. I like the feeling of being full. And so I think that's probably one reason doing the one meal a day worked great for me, is because when I do eat, I can eat, and I can eat until I'm full, and then I can stop, and I have no problem stopping once I hit that full mark. But my problem has always been, once I start eating, I just don't stop until I'm full. So that's why I think the one meal a day probably works the best for me. And so that may be what I just end up doing. I don't know.
What about OMAD, mate? When we talk about OMAD, for people listening to this podcast, they're sort of learning about IF, that's one meal a day. For me, OMAD is more like a restaurant-type meal where I'll start off with a snack, and then I'll have a main, and then I'll wind up maybe having a dessert. I might not. And then I might have a coffee and close my window. Is that something similar you do?
Or so
you
for me, that meal, I know, I would say you're probably in the majority with what you do. From the Facebook pages anyway, it seems like that's kind of how most people seem to fall. And I'm not that. I generally am a literally one meal. I will sit down for dinner with my wife and my daughter, and it's just whatever my wife is cooking for dinner that night, and I will sit down and eat until I'm full. So I don't necessarily say one plate, because if I pile enough on there, I guess, then it could be one plate. But generally, I just fix it, and then if I'm still hungry, I'll go back and get some more. But I sit down and I eat one meal until I'm full, and then I'm done.
Yeah. And can you just explain to people why that's important to recognize that sort of signal when you do get full, and not to just keep eating through because your window is a certain length?
Yeah, I think there are probably a lot of people that will just say, okay, now I have 8 hours to eat, if they're doing 16 and 8 or something, and they'll just eat that whole time. And usually when you're doing stuff like that, it's going to be junk. For me, I guess I have a hard time just eating that much because, like I said, I like to eat until I'm full. So all the little snacks and all of those kind of things just don't work for me. I need to just be able to sit down and have literally one meal.
Sort of that one meal a day, some people get confused about that, whether it's like the restaurant style, or the sort of what you just mentioned here, you just sit down and have that one meal and then that's it, and you eat to satiety and stop. But some of the things you've said today, mate, just resonate with me so much. And losing that amount of weight, and you really put yourself on a path to good health now. And what is sort of your exercise program now that you've lost that 160? Are you still doing a similar thing to what you were before? Is that ramped up?
Now I pretty much, I go and I run 3 to 4 times a week, and that's nothing major. Just about 3 miles is about what I do. And I'm going to run my first 5K in November. So I'm excited about that. I've never done anything like that before. Never thought I would. I played sports as a kid and stuff like that all the way through high school. I played baseball and things like that, but never ran. So now 3 or 4 times a week, I go and I run. And then I will do some other things at home, like I'll do some push-ups and maybe some sit-ups, or I might do a HIIT workout or something on the TV once in a while if I feel like it. Nothing real structured other than the running 3 to 4 times a week. That's pretty much I do that every week. And then the push-ups, I probably do push-ups every day, probably a total of, I mean, it's not a lot. I might, like say there's a commercial on TV or something, I might pop out of my chair and pop out 20 or 25 push-ups and then finish watching TV. And the next commercial, get down, pop out another 20 push-ups and watch some more TV. I don't know. It just kind of depends on how I'm feeling and where the energy level is at the moment. So
that's quite a number of push-ups, mate. I don't think I could do that many myself, to be truthful. That's pretty good.
Well, I'm trying to figure it out. I got a little app that's supposed to be kind of like the Couch to 5K thing. It's what I started with to get me to running. And that kind of works you up in little bits. And so there's another app along the same lines for push-ups. And so it starts you off with doing, you know, just 3 or 4 and then taking a minute break and then doing 3 or 4 and taking a minute break. And now it's got me up to where I can just do 25 and take a 1 or 2 minute break and then do another 20 and take it, you know, so it just builds it up slowly. That part to me is amazing when you can do all that fasted, because I do all of that in the fasted state usually is when I feel the best. So
mate, life post obesity, what are you most looking forward to in the future now? What's the one thing, what are sort of some of the things that you've wanted to do all your life, but your weight held you back? You got to go back and get on that roller coaster.
I'll have to do some roller coasters. I think I would like to go horseback riding. My daughter really loves horses and she wants to go horseback riding. I remember one time we were on vacation and we were talking about trying to go ride horses and stuff like that. And I started looking at the limits and I was too big to even, they wouldn't put that cruelty on the horses. So, you know, and I wouldn't either. I don't want to torture a horse with having to put me on their back. But now I think I could do that with no problem. And so I would like to go do that. So I think just living life and knowing that I have a lot of it in front of me is probably the best thing there is.
Oh, that's fantastic. And, mate, we've got 2 horses sitting right outside my window here. Yeah, I've watched my wife ride for years and years, and I've always been too heavy to ride them. And I've been in and around horses my whole life, and I've never been able to get on one because, I've just been too heavy. And now I've got to that stage. And funny enough, you're mentioning the horses is timely. I'm making my debut this weekend. I'm actually going to get on and ride, and I hope that I can go on trail rides with my wife and that, and ride the other horse we've got here.
Nice. Well, congratulations on that. You'll definitely be able to do it. I'm sure you'll post about that on the Facebook pages.
Oh yeah, I'll put the video whether I fall off or not.
There you go. Right. I've ridden a little when I was in high school. I would go over to some family's house after school, and they had horses, and so I would go and saddle them and do everything and go ride for a little bit then. And then now, you know, my daughter wants to do it and I could never go do it with her. So now I think we'll definitely have to make time for that.
Well, I just wanted to say too, if there's guys out there or even ladies that are carrying an enormous amount of weight and they think it is a too big a mountain to climb. I mean, Daniel obviously is a shining example that it's not. I mean, I've done it and so many other people have done it. And get into a good group. How did you find the Facebook groups helped you, Daniel? I mean, I call it staying plugged in. I mean, people say to me, why do you still stay in those groups? You've lost all the weight now. Why do you need that support? And I said, well, those people are my tribe. They understand my life. They understand how I work. And it's still important some days for me to get the motivation from them to keep going.
Oh, absolutely. That's the main thing is the support. You know, they're all of the same mindset. And I don't know, I feel good when I'm able to help somebody else. So, which is another reason why I always would talk about it to everybody, to the point of being annoying, I'm sure. And I would just talk so much about it because I know how it can help. And so I think being on those groups, and you do have a lot of new people on there that are still struggling with certain things, and they have lots of questions. And I think I'm somebody that has some answers. Sometimes I don't, but I like to be able to help other people do it. And I get something out of that. And then I also learn other things while I'm on there also, but just by seeing somebody else's journey and what they've struggled with, sometimes it pinpoints something that you never recognized in your own life when you see it in somebody else's, and helps you to maybe make a little correction.
Oh, 100%, mate. And I know I get messages from people all over. And I had a message from a lady one day who was running in the mountains of Kenya. And she was listening to the podcast that I did with Jim Stevens. And she said, "You have motivated me more than you'll ever know." And it was sort of after I did that podcast with Jin and I got my passion to share my journey with people. And I really hope, Daniel, that you record your journey. And when you see Daniel's pictures, I'll put one in the show notes, it will blow your mind. His transformation is simply amazing. And you look fantastic.
Thank you.
And I think that you really have that power to share your journey and to motivate others. And I hope one day you do put out a book. And Daniel Deal, it's been a pleasure, mate, having you here on the Fasting Highway with me today. And thank you so much for joining me.
Well, thank you very much. It's been my honor, and look forward to visiting with you some more on Facebook. So thanks again.
Yeah. I'd love to have you back on, mate. We've got so much more to talk about. I'd like to get you back on. We'll talk about the mindset and the mental part of it as an obese guy, and maybe we'll do that in part two.
Sure, absolutely. Sounds great.
Okay, Daniel, have a great day, and regards to your dad, and tell him I'd love to have him on this podcast.
Yeah, that'll be a chore to get him to do anything like this, but I'll keep nagging away at him. Maybe we can do it. There's some other people too. You know, we'll talk next time maybe. And I've got my wife kind of on the train, and I've got some aunts and uncles that are doing it now. I've got several friends that are doing it. As a matter of fact, the Fast, Feast, Repeat book that I had has been passed around to my mom, and then from now my mom to my wife's friends. And I think my wife has a list, I think, of people that are in line for that book. I may never get it back.
Yeah, I'm the same boat, mate. And why don't we just do a Zoom meeting and we can get everybody on at the same time? That would be fantastic.
Yeah, there you go. Exactly.
Oh, good on you, Daniel. And there you go. That's that passion to share, mate. But anyway, have a great day, mate. And we'll catch up soon. And thank you so much for joining us.
Great. Thanks again. Bye.
Okay. Cheers, mate. Bye.
Bye.
Oh, that was a great chat. Thanks so much, Daniel. I could really resonate with a lot of what you said there, and sort of brought back a lot of memories from my own journey. And I think what you've done is quite remarkable, and I know just how much of a challenge that is to do what you've done. And congratulations on your first 5K run. I think that's amazing when you think that you're a guy that was 360-odd pounds and now you're out running 5Ks in respectable time. That's just brilliant. I really love that. So next week, guys, we're joined by Piper Brinkley. And Piper is a very inspiring member of the international fasting community. And so until then, be well, be safe, and remember, clean fasting is everlasting.